Dr. Tedder is involved in a number of community task forces that address human trafficking and violence against women and adolescents. Additional areas of interest include anxiety disorders, child and adolescent development, parenting tools, and cultural diversity. Dr. Tedder is also currently involved in a research project that focuses on Black women's experience with intimate partner violence and non-offending caregivers' experiences with parenting children who have been sexually or physically abused. In her leisure time, after doing all of that, Dr. Tedder enjoys spending time outdoors, painting, attending various community events, and family time with her two teen daughters and dog son, Silas. Please welcome Dr. Tedder.
Good morning. Okay, get this working. How are you? Good. So this morning we're going to be talking about expanding mental health and wellness through congregational care models. We're going to jump right in and move to some of the things we're going to accomplish today. I'm going to describe contextual factors of mental health and wellness. I'm also talk about multiple rationales for expanding mental health and wellness through the church. And also, I'm going to give an example of a congregational care ministry in Durham, North Carolina, and identify resource considerations for your church. Okay? So I asked, how are you doing? And you said, fine. That's typical, right? Particularly in the South. How are you? Fine. It's sort of a pleasantry that we have when we're interacting with one another. But if you really want to know how I'm doing, maybe I'm depressed. Maybe I'm stricken with grief. Maybe I'm having issues with my marriage or my children. But if I tell you that, how will you perceive me? Will you think I'm crazy? Will you say, I really didn't want to know how you're doing? When we ask that question, do we really want to know how people are doing? Typically, no. It's just a pleasantry. So if I say, how are you? And you say, let me tell you how I'm really doing. I say, oh my gosh, I really didn't ask for all that. So it's something that we do, and we really aren't checking to see how people are really doing. Right? But people are not always doing fine, right? And in the church, some things that we say, we walk around, I know a lot of women and men, we say, you're too blessed to be stressed. Really? What does that mean? Does that mean that when I'm stressed, I'm not blessed? It's kind of dangerous. Or if you are stressed, you're not blessed. Or if you're blessed, you shouldn't be stressed. Why do we say that? And Pastor Crystal has given us so many wonderful examples, so I don't have to reiterate the story of Elijah, the story of Hannah. She was distressed, right? She was barren. Does that mean that she wasn't blessed? Was Elijah not blessed? He was distressed, just came out of this victory. He should be excited, right? But he was distressed. Do those things mean that they weren't blessed? So we see many stories in the Bible where people are blessed, but they are still distressed. So we have to remember that when we go about our day to day. We're in church, right? We fellowship with one another. We're blessed, but we may still be experiencing mental health distress. Right? We have to remember that in our interactions when we're asking, how are you doing? Be more specific. Because we were going to say, fine, but how are the kids? How's your husband? How's your wife? How's work going? Because we all have experienced some distress in this room. Okay. Just think about your stressors. Are you stressed at work? Some work-related issues? What about family? Issues with your marriage, your children? Sometimes, if you have teenagers like I do, you have experienced stress. If you hadn't gotten to that point, you will experience stress, right? What if you're a part of the sandwich generation where you're caring for your children and you're caring for your parents, right? Your aging parents, that can be distress. You're the only caregiver. Or you're sharing that responsibility with your other siblings. Financial stress. Think about the storm. So we have stress even from natural disasters, right? Spiritual stress. Guilt. So there's so many things. So what's your stress? We all experience stress. And if we're not careful, our stress can pile up and affect so many other parts of our life. Thank you. We can experience a health breakdown by not taking care of ourselves, So stress affects our physical health. Think about how it affects your blood pressure, headaches, stomach aches, even in children. If they're anxious, they may feel it in their belly or get these reoccurring headaches. How it affects your relationships. So even with work-related stress, you bring that home and you're short-tempered with your spouse, with your family, with your children. And children and adolescents, they're not exempt from stress. They're dealing with exams. They're dealing with the demand to excel and to make high scores on these standardized tests. And how does that affect the family, right? So it's important for us to have buffers to prevent this pileup of stress, which can lead us to a crisis. Some of the things that we can do. So of course, we pray and, you know, having loyal friendships and loyal relationships and neighbors, a loving church family, changing the viewpoint. So we know how these thoughts of doubts and these thoughts of ill will come into our mind. So it's important for us to monitor our thinking and to change our thoughts. So a lot of people who are experiencing depression have issues with their thinking, the negative thinking, the thinking that this is hopeless. Nothing will change. I'm stuck here. I am not enough. I am not important. And it starts here, right? And then it resonates in other areas in our lives. So these are some buffers that can help to prevent the pileup of stress and the effects of stress. And we know the effects of stress also can lead to so many other severe and persistent mental illness. So about 1 in 5 adults experience mental illness in a given year. That's 43.8 million adults. So that means that in this room, at least one of us has experienced some mental illness. And even think about children. So approximately 1 in 5 youth ages 13 to 18 experience a severe and mental disorder in some point of their lives. And when things feel hopeless or you feel that you can't go on, then a lot of times those thoughts of suicide begin to pervade our minds. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. and the 3rd leading cause of death for people aged 10 to 14, and the 2nd leading cause of death for people aged 15 to 24, right? When you feel that there's no way out, it's hopeless, the guilt begins to manifest and infest your body and your spirit. I have nothing else to do. And so suicide is the way that many people see as a way out. So even we think about help seeking. So we know that 1 in 5 of adults experience mental illness, and we know our children are also struggling with mental illness. But are we receiving help? Well, research tells us that only about 41% of adults in the U.S. with a mental health condition actually receive mental health services. So we know that 1 in 5 is experiencing a mental health issue, but only 41% of adults are receiving mental health treatment. That's concerning. And even our children, so just over half of children with a mental health condition, ages 8 through 15, received mental health services in the past year. And we think about our African American or Latinx brothers and sisters and Asian brothers and sisters, they are receiving mental health services at lower rates than our Caucasian counterparts. So we know there's this issue with mental illness, but we know that we're not receiving help even for our children. And we know that there are so many other socio-cultural issues that makes it more difficult for our minority brothers and sisters to receive mental health services. So we have a problem. And then we think about the shepherd. So a lot of times we come to church and we lay our burdens down, right? So we don't tell anyone else anything but the pastor. You tell the pastor. But pastors are also experiencing their own issues. Now, more than 1 in 5 pastors have personally struggled with a mental health condition, right? And think about people who are coming here and they're seeking relief. Now, research tells us that only about 49% of pastors rarely or never speak to their church or in sermons about mental illness. So I'm coming to the church to talk about my burdens or at least to really get some kind of relief, but you aren't talking about it in the church. You're not talking about mental illness or mental health. So some people leave the church. We find that 10% of individuals with acute mental illness have changed churches because of the church response. This is something we don't want. We're called to be disciples and disciple makers, but people are leaving because we're not addressing their needs. So again, we have a problem here. Okay. So church and mental health, is that something that we talk about? Historically not. Historically, mental health has been seen as something demonic, right? Something spiritual. You take it away, you pray it away, or if it's not working, you're still living in sin. It's something you're doing. It's because of your sinful nature. Once you stop that, then you will be okay. And think about even the Bible, when the disciples were confronted with the blind man, and I'm paraphrasing, and they asked, who sinned, this man or his parents? Jesus said, neither, nor the man or his parents. And that's kind of how it was typically, historically. Something you're doing in your life. If you stop doing this, you won't feel depressed. You just keep praying and you live right, and you'll be fine. Go in peace. But we know that's not working because we're still in the church and we're still experiencing mental health issues, right? All right, so think about congregational care. So we're called to bear one another's burdens. And so we want to move to congregational care and how we can support one another. We pray for one another. Do we listen to one another? So the greeting, how are you doing? Are you going to stand there and listen to me as I unpack everything? All right, spending time with one another. Right, these are some things. So when we're talking about congregational care, and I provide you a sample of a model of a church in Durham who has a congregational care ministry with regard to mental health, the issue is that they are helping one another carry each other's burdens, right? So we think about the parable of the Good Samaritan, how the man was robbed and pretty much left to die, how the priest walked past him, the Levite walked past him. Then a Samaritan, somebody who we wouldn't even think, they were the lowly of the low, we wouldn't even think would help, came by to help this young man, cared for him, went over and beyond. Do we do this when it comes to our hurt brothers and sisters, or do we ignore what's going on? Do we just sit and gossip? Did you hear such and such testimony? I didn't know they were going through that. Oh, well. Did you see them praising? I wonder what they have going on. They were shouting at church today. Something's going on in their marriage, right? This is the conversations that we're having outside of church. Did you hear what's going on? I don't know. I think they're getting a divorce. But are we praying? Are we talking? Are we listening? Are we opening ourselves up to hear what's going on and help our brothers and sisters? So this is the aspect of community care, congregational care, that we're missing a lot of times in the church. People are suffering alone and in silence, and they are suffering, right? So why does the church need mental health counseling? Well, we know there's a high prevalence of mental disorders in the U.S. and are reflected in our pews. So we think about mood disorders, including depression or bipolar, anxiety. A lot of our children, a lot of our adolescents, and even adults are experiencing anxiety. They're worried about so much. So many things in the world. When we think about the social political landscape, so many things in the world that people are worried about. Schizophrenia, think about personality disorders. People are having hallucinations and delusions and auditory and visual hallucinations. How are we responding to these people? Are we responding out of fear? So there are issues here in our pews that we need to address. I feel like I have a clicker, so I just keep doing this. Okay. And there are also behavior problems in children and adolescents. So parents sitting in our pews are having to deal with these things. And sometimes we're dealing with the church's response. Because if my daughter is misbehaving in the church nursery, I'm gossiped about. You really need to maintain better control over your child. Right? This is an unkept child. What are you doing? And then what does that do? That attacks me as a parent. So a lot of children are struggling with so much these days, right? And the parents are feeling the brunt of that, as well as the teachers. They're also experiencing that. Substance abuse and addictions. So people are dealing with so many things, and some engage in substance use to cope with that. We're seeing an increase in use of prescription medication, abuse of prescribed medications and painkillers. And relationship challenges. We know there's a high rate of divorce, right? So people are dealing with single parenthood. People are grieving. There's a lot of widows and widowers in our congregations. How are we responding to them? Are they overlooked? So extended family members. So when we think about even the housing crisis in Durham and lack of affordable housing, a lot of people are living together. A lot of extended families are living together. that can cause so many other relationship challenges and challenges when it comes to your stress as well. So there's a lot of issues that members of our congregations are dealing with. And just workplace relationships as well, right? Dealing with your supervisor. All right. So we continue to need to talk about this because there, in some areas, when we think about our rural areas, our brothers and sisters who are in Lumberton or in Creedmoor and even some in Hillsboro, not having the resources available, the mental health resources available, right? So it's important that we, the church, attend to that. We refer or we have something in church to help deal with these problems. We think about the implications of poverty, how it causes issues with homelessness, right? People are coping with substance abuse and child abuse and neglect, how stress may affect a parent's ability to parent and deal with the stress and tolerate the stressors associated with parenting. And just again, think about social cultural issues of racism and classism and sexism and the intersection of these different isms. Some way that compound stress becomes more complex, right? And people become more anxious. There are a lot of women right now who are anxious, thinking about, well, if they don't hear her talk and don't believe her story, what about my story? Should I even share my story, right? And that worry of if something happens to me, will I be believed? So there's some anxiety going on that's kind of coming from the macro level and the social cultural landscape. So we have to think about these things. It's also important because acknowledging mental health in the church lets people know that we embrace all of you and all parts of you. We don't cast you aside. You aren't a leper. You're accepted, right? So also it gives people a voice. It's okay for me to share what I'm going through, right? And it offers practical hands-on care that destigmatizes what we think about and how we think about mental illness, right? So people are coming here and they are daughters and sons of Christ. We want to welcome them and embrace them no matter what they're going through. And we think about the mental health continuum. We all fall somewhere. You can fall in this first quadrant to my left. You may have a diagnosis of a serious mental illness, but you're coping really well. Underneath that, you can have a diagnosis of a serious mental illness, but you're not coping so well. Or to my right, the upper quadrant, you can be a person who has no mental illness, but you're coping really well. Or at the bottom, you don't have a mental illness, but you're coping poorly. You're stressed out, you're not receiving help, you're not praying, you're not doing anything, you're not receiving any mental health treatment, and so your mental health is poor. And we can shift at any time. So right now, you may be someone with no mental illness, and you're coping well, you have positive mental health. But something, all it takes sometimes is one thing to move us to a person who has a no mental disorder, but has poor mental health. And move to the quadrant where now we're diagnosed with major depressive disorder and we're not coping well. So we can move at any time, right, when we say by grace. So when we think about mental illness, right now you may be fine, but it can be as a result of an accident, loss, trauma that can place us anywhere else. So we have to remember that we have to continuously take care of ourselves. And what are some barriers? So costs, we know that it's quite expensive. And even if you do have health insurance, you have to pay that copay. So sometimes that $40 copay just does not fit in your budget. So what does that mean? Well, sometimes I'm self-medicating, you know, prescription medication, alcoholism, just different things that you may experience to help you overcome, right? Overcome or to cope with these mental health issues. Accessibility, right? Especially in rural areas, do they have access? Are there buses available, transportation available to get you to an outpatient therapist? And the stigma, going into the office, I'm going to see my therapist. You're crazy or you're sinful. So the stigma is still there around mental health. And we have to destigmatize mental health. And this false dichotomy of spiritual versus psychological. So this is a spiritual issue. It's not psychological. You're going to the therapist, this is a spiritual issue. And so it's us versus them. So we are spiritual. So we deal with spiritual things in spiritual ways. Now, they are sciences, they believe this and they deal with certain things, but we are spiritual. You are a Christian. So you just come over here and we're going to pray about this and we're going to read and we're going to spend more time together and you're going to be okay. Because we're not like them. We don't believe in science. We don't believe in mental health. So now we separate ourselves a lot of times instead of saying, well, yeah, I'm a Christian and I'm spiritual and I can integrate that and I can still visit my mental health clinician, right? And of course, self-medication is viewed as something short-term. And we also misuse our medical providers. So we think about prescription medication and psychotropic medication. You know, a lot of times we're medicating. Just give me medication, give me some Zoloft, I feel okay. I don't want to work through these issues, just give me some medication. I want to get through the day. And even just misusing our religious leaders. Pastor. Pastor is human. Pastor can't handle every problem. We are helping each other, but there is some work that we have to do, and pastor can support it, but we misuse our religious leaders. So they have their burdens, but then we're also kind of dumping our burdens on them as well, thinking this is going to get us through. So we have to be careful when it comes to that. Okay. And thinking about some of the pastoral constraints. So sometimes the pastors aren't necessarily trained to equipped with the training to address some of the issues you're going through. Right, in seminary, they may not have had a lot of classes on mental health or psychiatric care. So them not having the knowledge. Remember the stressors. They're dealing with so much. So the stressors that clergy are faced with. And also some of those concerns that you have, they require sustained care that the pastors may not be able to offer. And then many of the concerns are quite complex and the clergy may not know what to do when it comes to whatever issue you're dealing with. So it's important for us to work on engaging with the community to make referrals. So I shouldn't have to wait until my pastor comes back from a missionary trip to get help. So there are people you can refer out to. I shouldn't have to wait until my pastor takes this course on mental health first aid to deal with my issues. So we refer to make sure the persons get the care that they need. It also allows pastors to focus on other things they have to do. Other ministries, missionary work, teaching, preaching. So we outsource to other competent, able, knowledgeable clinicians. Right. So let's talk about incorporating spirituality into therapy and what that looks like and why we even do this. So why do you integrate the two? Well, we know that a lot of Americans and even beyond are spiritual or religious, and they want care that focuses on some of those things and incorporates some of those things are important to them. And it helps to honor the true experiences of the individual who's coming for mental health treatment, right? So we're not leaving their spirituality out here. We're bringing it into the room. Because there should be some sort of alignment with our physical, spiritual, psychological health. So if I'm going through this, but I believe, so think about some of the dissonance we experience. You know, I believe that God will heal me. I know that. Feeling painful, I don't know if he's going to heal me. A lot of us have experienced this. I believe God is going to make a way for me. I'm having doubts right now. It's getting kind of hard. So what that means, because we're disaligned right now, right? We believe this, but for some reason, we're feeling out of sync. So it's important that in that room, in that therapy room, we're bringing those beliefs to challenge you and to show maybe how out of sync you are. So it's important for us to incorporate that to get you to where you want to go. As a therapist, we are supporting you, not trying to change your beliefs, but supporting you in your walk, right? Also, think about the similarities between therapy and spirituality. Both of them have an interest in the good of humanity. It's also a resource for growth, to grow psychologically, emotionally, and to grow spiritually. So both of them also focus on the internal and the external conditions of human suffering and human problems. And there's also opportunities for one-to-one work. So what happens typically, so you get into treatment, there's an assessment. So you have the clinical assessment, but there's also a spiritual assessment. And you want to think about where spirituality has a place in treatment. Is it part of the problem? The reason that you came to therapy? Was it because some of your spiritual issues, right? Issues dealing with spirituality? Or is it part of the solution? How can it be a part of the solution? What spiritual problems do you want to address in clients, in therapists, in therapy? And what spiritual resources can we draw on in your therapy session? How would you describe your relationship with the divine? What does it mean to be in relationship with the divine? What about communication? How are you communicating with your higher power? What about attachment? What does that look like? What does trust look like in your relationship with your higher power? What does conflict look like? For one example, you trust, but then you don't have any faith. You have faith, but then I don't have faith that you're going to make a way. What does that look like? How does that affect your relationship? We all have this sense of belongingness. Do you feel you belong in your relationship with your higher power? So if you've sinned or you feel guilty, do you still feel like you are in relationship? Then what does that look like? And how does it affect you that now you feel guilty about something? How do we nurture relationships? You know, what is your time? Are you spending time with your higher power? What does it look like when you're spending time? What is your energy or presence? Is money relevant? We're called to bring our tithes into the storehouse. Now, how does that affect your relationship? Or how do we nurture our relationship by higher power? So some of the elements that, you know, we incorporate, we question spiritual beliefs. What are your spiritual beliefs? What exactly do you believe? Spiritual characteristics. So do you feel peaceful? You know, I feel this way. Those affective traits. Spiritual actions. You know, ways that your spirituality affects your relationships with others. Do you set boundaries in your life when it comes to other people around you? Your spiritual experiences. You know, I saw an angel, or I see this, or God came to my bedside last night. Now, what are your experiences like? So we want to get an understanding of your spiritual beliefs, your spiritual attitudes, and your spiritual experiences. And then those practices. You know, are you praying? Are you meditating? Are you having your quiet time? How much are you reading the word for yourself? Are you attending any worship, any small Bible studies? So we just kind of want to get a feel of what you're doing on your spiritual journey. And just other examples of integration. Your language, right? When people say, my God or my Father, what is your language like? Right? The stories, and we get that through the stories. We get that through the terminology you're using, and we question that. There's so much power in metaphors, in the characters, and parables. You know, who is your favorite? What is your favorite book in the Bible? Why is that? Who's your favorite character? Which character do you most identify with, and why is that? So we learn from that. And also spiritual practices, so reflecting on scripture, you know, reading the text together in therapy, talking about forgiveness and what that looks like, and also prayer. So just to give an example of one church in Durham, at Union Baptist, they have a ministry of congregational care. It's called MC3. So I want to give you just an overview of what they're doing, and we'll talk about kind of what this may look like in your congregation. So beginning in the year of 2000, and they had two goals, and they still have two goals, to deliver confidential mental health care to their congregations without asking for any monies or there are no costs associated with it, and to equip laypersons to attend to emotional and spiritual needs in the congregation and community, because all of us should be working. So the part of the congregational care model is that everyone has a role. Everyone has a gift and a talent. Remember, it's not just about the pastor. So this is their staff, and it may look very different for your congregation. They have a licensed psychologist on staff. They have a licensed clinical social worker, a licensed professional counselor. Also, many of those licensed clinicians, they have training in addiction specialists, training in addictions. They have four Stephen leaders and seven active Stephen ministers, and they have six grief support group facilitators. Mm-hmm. So they provide counseling, individual, marital, family, and group counseling. Also consultation, and they refer for medication management. They refer for more severe mental illness to outside clinicians, and also for psychological evaluations, they refer out when needed. And so a Stephen minister is a layperson that's trained to provide confidential care for as long as is needed. They're very distinct from psychologists or therapists, so there are boundaries there ethically, and they know that. So there's a requirement, you have to be committed. So when we're working, when you're having workers, you have to have that commitment. So they're committed, they receive training, they receive visits with their care receiver for approximately 1 hour a week, and they have bi-weekly supervision and monthly continuing education. Go to the next one. So what needs do Stephen ministers meet? So issues with divorce, adjustment issues, transition issues, people are dealing with unemployment, just other transitions, loss and grief. So they're trained to care for other people in the congregation who are dealing with some of these issues. They also have grief support group facilitators because a lot of people in our congregation are dealing with grief and loss and having a hard time and kind of destabilized because they're still dealing with this and not understanding it. They have so many questions around the loss of their loved ones. So they have grief support group facilitators, and they receive training by counselors from the Unicorn Bereavement Group Center in Hillsborough, North Carolina, and they facilitate these groups and pairs. So some of the resource considerations that you want to even think about for your congregation, the budgetary constraints, right? So what do we have the monies for? Think with Union Baptist, they also received a grant, so there are grant opportunities out there, right? So that helped them to be able to provide these services for no cost. Staffing, you know, who's available? We're not only counting on a pastor, but each of us in here has a role. Even down to the teenagers and the youth, they have a role as well. So think about the space available. So you have to think about what space you have available to provide these services in a confidential manner. The breadth of services, so what kind of services are you going to have? For some people, they may say, well, we have the grief ministry and we have Stephen leaders, and that's all we can have right now. And then we refer out for any other issues. If that's all you have, the budget, and we talk about the staffing for, then that's good. That's a great start, because we want to know that you're focusing and you're talking about mental health and you're doing your part and you're doing your work to respond to the mental health needs of congregants and even the community. And then what is that process like? So there are a lot of other considerations, the ethical considerations, make sure it's confidential. We're not gossiping about the other person's issues. We're not blaming them for whatever happened. So training is really important. Practices of self-care. So self-care is like an ethical imperative, things that you have to do to take care of yourself. Make sure that you're eating properly. You're taking the time to make sure you're okay, right? Because even therapists have therapists. You have to make sure that, you know, you're even okay, right? And even church and community partnerships, we should not be operating in silos. Are we partnering with other churches? Are we partnering with other psychologists or therapists in the community to refer when needed? And then educating our disciples. So you should have some way, some source of communication to communicate to your congregants about your mental health goals and mental health work. So you can do that through your website, your bulletin board, whatever you currently use. Text messaging to let them know about mental health. You can have mental health wellness facts, different statistics, different resources for them, but you're communicating to the church. And even it spills into the community as well. And people will come in your church because they heard that you're accepting and you're welcoming them, even though they're fighting mental illness, even though they're fighting substance use and substance addiction, that you are trained and you understand and you can refer them to the resource that they need if you don't have it available. So again, with Union Baptist, they have other ministries that they collaborate with. So of course, the senior adult ministry, they have Women of Spirit, youth ministry. It's important for us to even talk to our kids. You can teach your kids how to be really body smart. For example, you know, some kids will say, well, my belly hurts. And once they understand why it hurts, you know, they'll say, my belly hurts. I think I'm becoming worried about something. Or I keep clenching my fists or my teeth, I think I'm becoming angry. So you teach them about their body and to understand the different parts of their bodies, right? Those are some things you can do. And teach them about love through the Bible. It's a story about the Velveteen Rabbit. You know, that book is great for kids, understanding self-love and the power of love. So you collaborate with other ministries within your church. And again, community connections. We collaborate with other churches around Durham and even beyond. All right. So some things you want to consider. You want to consider the importance of a mental health congregational care ministry to help to reduce stigma. And you educate, remember, even from the children to the adults. You educate them about mental wellness and the importance of being mentally well. You integrate it in your ministries. You're using comprehensive strategies of education, prevention, screening, and support and group approaches when you're incorporating mental health into certain ministries. You're offering services to the community as a witness. Remember, we're called to, you know, make disciples and to witness. And you're collaborating. Collaboration is extremely important. Utilize task shifting. So what we're doing, we're working with everyone. You're training everyone in the church. And sometimes local mental health agencies have free trainings. So you want to be plugged in and to collaborate so that you can train your staff on mental health first aid, what it looks like, what are the signs of depression, how do you know when someone's anxious, how to care for someone or to respond to someone who's just lost a loved one. So there are certain things that you want to know. Also, you want to address social factors. You know, how does my gender and my ethnicity and my sexuality affect my experience in the church, my experience outside the church? Are there safe spaces for me? Is the church a safe space for me? We know, we think about on a macro level, society doesn't feel like a safe space for many people who are dealing with so many issues. So you want to try to understand the implications of these social issues and these constructs and how they affect one's mental health. And then when needed, you use available technology integrated with personal contact. So people can't always come to the church to talk about issues, but there are free confidential apps such as VC that you can use to have these confidential sessions. So you think about, you know, the pastor and think about other members of the church when they're really busy and how we can incorporate technology in a confidential way. Of course, again, broaden your training. There's a lot of free training tools, a lot of tools that you can use when it comes to training your counselors or training your laypersons and also providing supervision. Developing networks and partnerships for mutual learning and collaboration. These think tanks, you're talking amongst one another. So this is a great start, having this conversation you're having today and collaborating and having the opportunity to share your tools amongst one another and developing those partnerships. And then I just kind of listed some resources, and I provided Pastor Crystal with a spreadsheet of resources of therapists. The last two provide, these are psychiatrists, the last two, and provide psychiatric care when needed. So those are resources. These are some other resources, some textbooks, and I'll also share this with you. Just, you know, give you more information on depression, anxiety, loss, social anxiety, eating disorders, and some of these things that even our children are dealing with. So we can't forget about the children, even to our aging population. So these are just some other resources for you that I listed, and some things that you can do. You know, some things, some self-care tools, and this came from Dr. Tanya Armstrong's Blossoming Hope textbook, not textbook, but book. And see, these are some things that you can do just to engage in self-care practices. Okay. Well, I thank you for listening, and I open the floor for questions.